Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Welcome in. This is the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening to this show. Thanks so much for making this part of your day. Live from Los Angeles, I'm Doug Gottlieb, filling in for Colin Cowherd, who's having a ski day. Nothing says toughness, grittiness, and the feeling of sports fans like a good ski day in Park City. Just kidding, Colin. Enjoy the slopes. We'll see you in South Beach. Welcome in. We got a lot to get to. Michael Rappaport's going to join us. Rich Ornberger is going to join us. Rick Bucher is going to join us. Talk a little about LeBron last night getting a win in Brooklyn. All the dignitaries were there. We'll talk about his comments afterwards. Eli Manning just officially retired as a member of the New York Giants in 15 minutes. I will explain why Eli Manning is incredibly admirable. Admirable for his career, which will but should not end up in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. We got some Clippers chemistry issues. We got a lot to get to. And Zion Williamson plays again coming up tonight. Well, let's talk Tom Brady, though, because apparently the New England Patriots have put Tom Brady on the clock. Now, there's a couple of different issues with Brady in regards to deciding sooner rather than later what his future will be. There's a March cutoff for the end of the football year. Okay, the end of the football year is the middle of March. And in order for the Patriots to bury some of what would be a signing bonus on a new contract in this year, he has to do it sooner rather than later. So there's some logistics to it. But then there's just the reality to, hey, dude, we can't go and bring in other quarterbacks and make other offers unless we know what you're going to do. Forget about the draft, which is after free agency. It's the opposite, obviously, of the NBA, which makes the NBA free agency even more interesting. But we've seen this before with the NFL, where a quarterback will sign, and we think he's the guy, and then they'll make a move in the NFL draft to get another guy who's the heir apparent, and then there's kind of a dead man walking feel to the start. That's not Tom Brady. You may draft the heir apparent, but you got to decide with Tom Brady now. And I think what the Patriots are doing by telling Tom Brady, hey, man, we need to know middle of March because otherwise we can't pursue other opportunities, is one, a little bit of respect. Hey, you get right of first refusal. But two, it's calling Brady's bluff. Right? Like, look, Tom Brady technically could work in Indy because it's indoors and they have a good offensive line. But do you think for 1 second, and we'll get to Giselle, but do you think for 1 second that Tom Brady is going to play in the dome that was built for Peyton Manning? You think, does anybody actually believe that? If that's not happening, Tom Brady would put on many a jersey. He'll never put on a Jets jersey, never put on a Bills jersey, and he's never put on a Colts jersey, and I don't think he's put on a Broncos jersey, right? A Niners jersey was the most possible because he grew up idolizing Joe Montana, and grew up in the Bay Area. But sorry, that's been taken by his heir apparent, right? His understudy. So he's not going to Indy. He's not going to Tampa. This isn't a shot at Tampa. Tampa's great, but it's at the wrong body of water even for the state of Florida. He's not going to a place that close to the Redneck Riviera and bringing Giselle and the whole tribe down there. That Philip Rivers, maybe. Tom Brady doesn't play in Tampa. And, oh yeah, by the way, they're the worst and the least prestigious team in that division. And it's in the NFC South. It's a better weather version of Buffalo in terms of the amount of attention paid to it nationally. He ain't going there. He ain't going to Indy. Hey, he is a superstar. He is an icon. He is a brand. And so the only places are New York, L.A., and maybe Vegas. And the Vegas thing does make sense on paper. You're like, hey, what do old stars go and do when they're trying to collect one last check in perpetuity? You go to Vegas, right? Britney's there. She plays. You know, Garth had this incredible show that he did you know, several times a year. When it's not just Wayne Newton and all of the other old-time stars. This is what people have done for years. You go and do a show in Vegas, collect a check. But do we really think that you're going to go from the Patriots to the Raiders, an organization that has had one successful year in the last 18, 19? That even though John Gruden may love him and love quarterbacks and want to move mountains, he's the opposite of what John Gruden technically likes in the lack of athleticism and foot speed at quarterback for play actions, for movement in and around the pocket. Plus, they're just not that good. In addition to Vegas being a little bit off-brand for him, even if it fits this time in his career in comparison to this time in entertainer's career, you're going to go to the Raiders in Vegas and play for Mark Davis? And oh yeah, by the way, Tom Brady's a guy who likes it how he likes it. And recreating that in Vegas with the Raiders and John Gruden and his strong opinions, that feels more like a hypothesis than a theory that will actually prove out to be true. And then you got the Chargers. Look, I believe I'm the only living Charger fan who is on national or even local broadcast, right? Like, there are, like, this is, I'm in an empty room. Where's Joy today? It's because I said we're having a meeting of Chargers fans. That's why the studio's empty. The Chargers are, and again, this is from an avid Charger fan who knows people in the front office and the players and the coaches and loves the roster that they have. The Chargers are the fifth most important NFL team in Los Angeles. Raiders are one. Cowboys are two. Rams are probably three. Niners are four. Chargers are five. And I didn't even stack in USC football, Dodger baseball, Laker basketball. And they're fighting now in tooth and nail with the Clippers. So you're taking a team that lacks NFL relevancy with a town that doesn't really love the NFL yet. By the way, the Steelers probably more popular in Los Angeles than the Chargers are. The Packers probably more, the Chiefs possibly more popular. All right, enough. Like, I got friends of the Chargers. Like, we get it. Nobody likes us. Okay. The only thing that makes sense, well, two things that make sense about the Chargers is they do have some dudes to throw to. They might have the best dudes to throw to in all of the NFL. And they got a nasty pass rush. I don't know if they can block for him. They got a play caller who's been calling plays for like five games. But the only thing that makes sense is technically, it's in L.A., right? And they'll actually play in Los Angeles. Unlike the Angels, they'll play in Los Angeles. But they'll have as much resonance as the Angels in Los Angeles. Like, that one just doesn't, that one just doesn't feel like it makes sense. So why would Brady go to Vegas? Why would Brady float it out there? Man, listen, I'm going to listen to all possibilities. Because Tom Brady, just like any of these guys, has an ego. Right? And between his ego, his wife's ego, the people around him's ego, like, look, dude, you've been taking less for a long time with the idea in mind they're going to put people around you to make you look great. And it has worked for a long time. But now, in your time of most need, look what they put around you. Right? You got N'Keal Harry, who didn't play half the year, then couldn't remember what he was supposed to do the other half. You got Julian Edelman, who, you know, now he's having another surgery. He's in his 30s. He's already getting popped for PEDs because he's just trying to keep up with the athleticism of the position. They were surprised by Rob Gronkowski's retirement, even though Gronk thought about retiring the year before. What were you surprised by? And they haven't been able, you know, Antonio Brown lasted for 5 seconds. Josh Gordon lasted a lot longer than anybody had him in the over-under, but he's not there. There's nobody there. You want me to come back to work? You're going to have to pay me. This isn't about changing jobs. And the Patriots know it. Patriots know this is about the bottom line. This is about money. I've done the right thing by you. Now you got to do the right thing by me. I'm the Jordan of the sport. Remember what Michael Jordan got his last 2 years in Chicago. $30 million. That's when the best players were making in the fives and the sixes. He made 30 because he was underpaid most of his career. That's what Tom Brady wants. And the Patriots are calling his bluff. I'm sure the Patriots have given him kind of some sort of structure of what they're thinking and for how long they're thinking it. Hey, dude, let us know. Because they know that with Josh McDaniel not going anywhere, where's he going to go? He's going to go and build a new offense? Not what he does. I know that Peyton did that in Denver, but Peyton was the offensive coordinator when he was in Indy. And he told them when they were punting and when they weren't punting. That's never been Tom Brady. He's worked in partnership with Josh McDaniels, with the exception when Josh was gone to Denver. They've worked hand in hand. And those guys together have built this incredible dynasty. And at this point in his career, the Patriots are like, you're not breaking that up. You're not starting all over. You're not teaching an entire offensive staff a new verbiage, a new way of doing things. If McDaniel's got the job in Dallas, okay, I'm listening. Right? I'm listening. Because they have a great offensive line. They have a running game. They have some guys that can catch the football. They're playing indoors. That helps his arm strength. That stuff kind of makes sense. And the branding makes sense. Cowboys, Brady, morph them together. You know, those things make sense. The Chargers don't make sense. I know Kyrie signed with Brooklyn and Kawhi signed with the Clippers. Okay, but we're talking about the most established brand in the National Football League, one synonymous with championships. Right? Tom Brady doesn't play another season to play another season. He plays another season to win another championship. And what's the place that he's most likely to achieve those goals? It's in New England, where the Jets are still the Jets. Buffalo still doesn't think they have a real quarterback, even if they got a playoff team. Hey, Miami's a year away from being a year away. And he's still got Josh, and even devoid of talent outside the numbers last year, they won 12 games, and he had the ball down one with a chance to drive down and win another one. The Patriots are calling Brady's bluff. They know he has no other options. And they know it's all about money. And they know that Tom Brady doesn't want to make it about money. He's never going to mention being about money. He wants to be Jeter and play in Kobe and play in one spot. But he wants to have that Michael Jordan-like payday at the end of it. Because then it makes sense to Giselle. Then it makes sense to his ego. Then it makes sense to the rest of the league. All right, well, he stuck around for one last big payday and take one more shot at winning a championship. And my guess is the Patriots are sitting there going like, you know, we had Jimmy G. He's shown that he's a Super Bowl guy. We got you for two Super Bowls. You're starting to fade. You may be worth all of that, but we can't spend all of that because at this point in your career, you're actually not as good as you were when you were making less and achieving more. The Patriots are calling the bluff of Tom Brady. Let us know, big boy. You want to come? Here's your offer. It's reasonable. You'll end up a Patriot for life. If you don't, just let us know. And we'll be on to Cincinnati.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Today it became official. Eli Manning is now a retiree. Here's Eli talking about his career.
From the very first moment, I did it my way. I couldn't be someone other than who I am. Undoubtedly, I would have made the fans, the media, even the front office more comfortable if I was a more rah-rah guy. But that's not me. Ultimately, I choose to believe that my teammates and the fans learned to appreciate that. They knew what they got was pure, unadulterated Eli. For most of my life, people have called me easy. Believe me, there is nothing easy about today. Wellington Mara always said, once a giant, always a giant. For me, it's only a giant. Thank you so much.
Yeah, not really sure about that one. For me, it's only, I know what he's getting at. He's getting at that he's probably had opportunities the last couple of years to leave, to walk away, and he chose not to do so. There's a very dignified manner in which Eli has always carried himself. Look, it's not his fault that his brother is considered, if not the greatest, one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. We have gotten this place where suddenly now, because Brady won a Super Bowl last year, that we stopped talking about Peyton. And maybe it's because Peyton did not have nearly the postseason success. But when Peyton retired, there was a lot of people who know a lot more about football than you and me that were like, hey, Peyton Manning might be the greatest ever. I don't think he is, but he's in at least the conversation. It's not Eli. Eli should be judged on his own legacy. And it is a dignified legacy. It is a classy legacy. Fairly emotionless, which he discussed today. He's not a rah-rah guy. He's not an up guy. He's not a down guy. He's just a guy. There's a little bit of throwback to him in which he did throw the ball downfield. He did throw it to the other team at times. But what I love about the Eli legacy is he's clutch. Well, I guess. Was he only clutch when they won? He was not. Like, he. We get to this point with guys that we respect, guys that we like, that we won't even mention the negative side to it. It's like politicians with stats that go against them. They won't even share them. I mentioned this yesterday when I was here with Colin, which is like, okay, he's big game clutch. That was what happened the 2 years in which they went on Super Bowl runs. They were in the playoffs four other times. They lost all four of the first games in which they played. Was it then in which he wasn't clutch? I struggle with that. You know? Both of those Super Bowls that he won the MVP in, it was as much because of his performance as they couldn't find one of the defensive linemen to truly give it to, right? Had they given it to, let's give the MVP award to the New York Giants pass rush. Like, that would have been, everybody would have been like, yeah, that kind of makes sense. Makes sense. Look, Eli Manning might have purported himself in as classy or even more classy manner than Peyton Manning. He never let the media get to him. Fans get to him. The turnovers get to him, per se. All these things are accurate. He only played for one team. And I said this before, and I'll say it again. He's going to get into the Hall of Fame. But none of those things should be the reasons that he gets into the Hall of Fame. The Hall of Fame should be reserved for the absolute best of the best of the best. The best of the best of the best. And if you want to sit there and go like, yeah, he had an above average career, but he won two Super Bowls, so that puts him in, like, okay. If that's you, if the strongest part of your argument is that he won two Super Bowl MVPs, that's a strong argument. But if he was so clutch, or maybe if he was so good, why did they only have five double-digit win seasons? 16 years, five double-digit win seasons. Again, I'm not talking about 14 win years or 15 win years or the 16 win year that Tom Brady had. Okay? I'm not talking about playing in the Super Bowl and losing the Super Bowl. Heck, playing in a conference championship game. He did it twice. He won twice. Right? But there are plenty of years in which he didn't even appear in the playoffs or couldn't win a playoff game. I struggle with the he's clutch, but only in those 2 years. Right? Because I always thought that if you're clutch, well, you're clutch. Like the Derek Jeter thing is this. Derek Jeter has, I believe, almost the exact same, if not the exact same batting average in the playoffs as he does the regular season. He's the same guy. Pressure seemingly didn't affect him. If you think Derek Jeter is the greatest shortstop ever, or you think he's 10th or 5th, whatever, what you can't say about Derek Jeter is that pressure affected him, because we have a huge sample size, and the sample size tells us that he was basically the same guy in the playoffs as he was the regular season, which is kind of by definition clutch, or the ability to be just solid. Right, we think of clutch as being slightly better in the most important situations, and I could point out different instances where Jeter was. But Eli wasn't. Or maybe he was. In the regular season, he was a 500 quarterback, and the postseason, he was a slightly above 500 quarterback. It's kind of who he is. And that usually does not reserve you a spot in Canton at the Hall of Fame. But he was classy. He was kind of understated. He did carry the weight of the Manning name and of being the little brother of Peyton, which is a lot. And playing in New York is a lot. And it's good for something. Does that put you in the Hall of Fame? I think it will. I don't think it should.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Jimmy Garoppolo has been asked about his lack of pass attempts in the playoffs thus far. Chris, remember, Terry Bradshaw busts his own chops all the time, right? He's talked long, in long-winded fashion about his own inadequacies as a passer and makes fun of how smart he is and whatever. And so when he busts his chops about his arm not being tired, winning the NFC Championship, it's what anybody would notice. They only threw eight pass attempts. Here's Jimmy G talking about his lack of pass attempts in the playoffs so far.
Everyone has different ways to, you know, get motivated, and very similar to Sherm, I do the same thing. You know, I hear all the stuff and everything, but it's just you can't put that all out there all the time. It's just, you know, you have to do with it what you will, and take it for what it is. It's just, you know, at the end of the day, you got to go out there and play football.
Got to go out there and play football. They had two negative plays running the football against the Green Bay Packers. Two. 27 pass attempts in two playoff games. 3 run plays for every 1 pass attempt. They are sheltering. They are hiding him. He is their Trent Dilfer, who, by the way, is a friend of the program. They're scared of Garoppolo. Look, Jimmy G has only thrown it 16 times since he threw a pick in the divisional round game. I think some of this is you have to learn from your own past, not just Garoppolo's past, but Kyle Shanahan. What was he criticized so roundly for when he was in Atlanta and they're up 28-3, right? Just run the football, stay ahead of the chains, kick a field goal. You're up 31-3. The game is over, Kyle. Instead of, you know, trying to score points and dust the Patriots off and put a half a 100 on the board. They haven't trailed in either one of these games. When they were tied with the Vikings, they had 15 pass plays and 12 run plays. They are constructed this way. You don't think Kyle Shanahan learned from his dad? How did his dad win 2 Super Bowls? Running the football. Outside zone. What, they have 7 running backs? Is that what we calculated before the show? 7 consecutive running backs with 1,000 yards? Right? Some you remember, like Terrell Davis in the Hall of Fame. Some you've forgotten, like Reuben Drones. Remember Reuben Drones and Mike Anderson? Right? Didn't they have Clinton Portis 1 year as well? Right? This is how his dad won. This was the mistake he made when he was in Atlanta. And if he'd forgotten about those mistakes, yeah, his quarterback threw a pick and put him in a bad spot against the Vikings. And as much as we think of Jimmy G, he's not terribly experienced. He's never started. This is his first full year he started in the National Football League. They're scared to let him throw. No, they're just doing what's smart. Do they trust him? I don't know. They trust the running game. They ran for 286 yards. I don't know if you've heard this stat, but the Niners are actually really good when they let him throw, too. They're 10-0 when he throws for 275 yards or more. That does not line up with the rest of the National Football League. In the regular season, they had slightly more pass attempts than run attempts, and this is for a number one seed, 476 to 449. They have balance, and they have taken what the defense has given them. And on Sunday, the Packers gave them as much as they wanted running the football. Look, I understand third and eight, early in the game, against the Packers, they could have thrown the football. Instead, they run it, and they get a touchdown on it. But it was merely more the fact that they ran it. But if you want to use gross stats and volume of runs, bro, you weren't watching that game. That was a game which, at every moment, you thought they should run it. And the only times they threw it were late to Kittle. And it worked once, and they got a bogus pass interference call the second time. If you can't stop me, why would I stop doing it? 2 negative plays. 2. They just absolutely, and it was a complete mismatch for the style that the Packers want you to drop back and throw 30 times. The Smith boys are designed to, their team is designed to get a lead early, pin their ears back, rush the passer. That's the opposite of what the Niners did. We're not going to play into your strength. So if you want to say that they don't trust him, that they're scared to use him, that's fine, but that means you didn't watch the regular season. You didn't watch them go into New Orleans and uncork Jimmy G and let him go out and win a game on the road in one of the toughest, if not the toughest, environment in the National Football League. Kyle Shanahan learned from his dad. He learned from his own mistakes. He learned from his own quarterback, and he's in the Super Bowl. And that game, though it felt like it could have gotten, he was getting close there with about 8.5 to go, Rodgers got him within 2 scores. That was the closest they got in the second half, was 2 scores. We really criticizing a gameplay? Like, this is media narrative. We got too long to focus on this game. It was like, yeah, he threw the ball 8 times. 8. That's not a lack of trust. That's an understanding the time, the score, the momentum of the game, and that they can't stop you. If you want to, you want to know a team that doesn't trust their quarterback, Blake Bortles was playing magnificent football for the Jaguars. This is going back 3 seasons ago, right? 3 years ago. They go into Pittsburgh, and he plays the game of his life, wins a shootout. So they're up, I think, 14 in the first half against the Patriots. They get the ball back with 59 seconds to go on the road in Foxborough. The Jaguars take a knee twice, run in the locker room with the lead. That is not trusting your quarterback. That is not trusting your quarterback. When the other team can't stop you and you're dominating at the point of attack, when the Packers can't seem to set the edge, and every time they do, they're too far up, upfield, and they're just one cut and cutting it back. When a running back has more success in one game than he had his entire career in college, you just feed the hot hand. You feed him till he burps. Nothing in sports is more intimidating than when you can't stop a team running the football. That was like a high school game. They beat you left, they beat you right, they beat you up the middle. They beat you left, they beat you right, they beat you up the middle. If you think that's not trusting a quarterback, throw in the tape of the Jaguars with the lead in Foxborough with 59 seconds to go with a quarterback with a hot hand, and they take a knee and say, thanks, but no thanks. We'll play in the second half. That's not trusting a quarterback.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Rick Bucher joins us. Of course, you see him on all of our shows here on Fox Sports 1. Read his work in Bleacher Report, longtime NBA writer. All right, let's start with the Lakers from last night. All right, they go and they beat the Nets. Mm-hmm. And afterwards, LeBron James, do we have that ready? LeBron James was talking about needing, whether or not they need another player, need another weapon. This right. On Spectrum Sportsnet. Take a listen.
We have enough right now, but it's not about, you know, competing and worrying about June. It's about worrying about January. And if we continue to get better throughout January and then we move on to February, and continue to get better. And if we continue this trend, then we'll put ourselves in a position where we can compete for a championship and have a chance. And in this league and in sports in general, all you want is a chance.
So, it tells me two things.
Okay.
One,
yeah.
He's smarter than Kyrie Irving.
Yes.
And two, he's learned from his past mistakes.
Thank you.
That's it. If you're asking me the question that he was asked, do they have enough? No, they do not.
Of course not.
They need another piece, but there's no reason for LeBron James with his history or his position with the Lakers to open that can of worms and say, this is what we need.
What is the matter with Kyrie Irving? Like, help me out. And he, for people who haven't been following
turning
it.
Turning to Dr. Phil?
Oh. No, but I just listen, for people who haven't been following it. So Kyrie, going back like a week ago, said, you know, hey, we don't have enough. Now, he hasn't even played a game with Kevin Durant yet.
Right.
So who knows? When he comes back, we're a guy or two short. He named like four other guys.
Right.
15 guys in a roster.
It didn't mean, and Joe Harris and Jared Allen notably not mentioned.
Right, not mentioned.
Right.
Right. So then he kind of, well, I should have named all 15 guys, whatever. Like, no, you shouldn't have. And then he said, you know, Dr. Martin Luther King, you know, was like, dude, please don't liken yourself to Dr. Martin Luther King. Like, we asked you about your team, and you said you don't have enough, and then you didn't mention, like, I don't know, 9 guys currently on the roster.
Right.
Like, you did this. What's wrong with Kyrie?
Well, he said many times that he learned how to lead from LeBron James. He's read a little bit too closely. LeBron, we've seen LeBron do the same thing.
Yes.
LeBron will say something. It will not land the way he had intended. And then he will try to revise it and say, well, what I meant was. And then if people aren't buying that, he will turn himself into
martyr.
A victim.
Yeah.
As far as you guys don't understand what it's like to be me, et cetera, et cetera. So, I don't know Kyrie well enough to say why he is the way he is. But he acts, as someone observing him, he acts like a narcissist. It's always, you don't get me and my view of things. if you don't see it my way, then that's your fault, not my fault. And I think in some ways he doesn't, he sees himself in one way as a in one way, and yet doesn't have the ability to actually be the person that he thinks that he is.
It's really interesting. I said this earlier in the show. The two teams that everyone in the NBA I talked to said had great chemistry last year were the Clippers and the Nets. And everybody's like, man, they look like they're having fun.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Because the NBA regular season is not fun.
They were better than the sum of their parts because of their chemistry.
The sum of their parts was better than the individual pieces.
Exactly right.
Right?
Yes.
Okay, and they look like they're having fun. Like, they're not that much fun to go and play. Like, the Lakers played New York, and then they played Brooklyn, and they played in Philly. You know, then it's cold, and you're like, ugh, more games that don't matter. But the Nets and the Clippers somehow made it fun last year.
For sure.
Okay? They both added two superstars. The Nets don't have one playing. The Clippers occasionally have both playing.
Right.
But I just wonder, and you know, there's a story about the Clippers, which I know Pat Beverly said is fake news, but I do think there's some reasonable.
Sure.
There's people who are like, man, it's a lot with Kawhi sometimes playing, sometimes not playing.
Without question, anytime there's a double standard, there's going to be issues within a team. But the reality is, in the NBA, there are always double standards. There are double standards everywhere you go. Superstars, people who drive the bus, are treated differently. They're afforded different things. Now, this is a new situation for the Clippers, and this is where it's different from the Nets, because the expectation is, one, that they're going to win a championship, and two, you have four guys led by Montrezl Harrell who are on contract years. So is it a problem? No. Is it real? Yes, it is, in that there are some rumblings, there's some discord, but it's not any discord that we haven't seen with the Cavs or the Warriors. The Warriors had all of this the last couple of years.
Yes, but are they equipped to handle it? That's the big question.
That's we don't know, because they haven't climbed the mountain and navigated those issues and then successfully won a championship. But when I look at, I don't see any way in which Montrezl Harrell and his desire to get paid doesn't benefit from them winning a championship. So ultimately, when everybody has to put everything aside, I believe that they will.
Rick Bucher joining us in the Herd. I'm Doug Gottlieb filling in for Colin. Let's dial back, and this does include the Clippers. In regards to the Lakers, we both agree they don't have enough.
Right.
You think Andre Iguodala solves all their problems. I do not. I think there's a reason you've heard Derrick Rose.
Yeah.
There's a reason you've heard Darren Collison, who they wanted in the offseason. LeBron is not he can bring the ball up the court.
Right.
He can start an offense, but he's not a point guard, especially for the most of the game. Rondo's not good enough. I love Caruso. They love Caruso. He's not good enough. They need a starting caliber point guard who can play with LeBron. Do they not?
They do. Honestly, they need both. I don't think that they're one piece away.
Yep.
I think they're two. I think they need another dynamic wing player, particularly a defensive wing player like an Iguodala, a guy with experience. I mean, I don't know ultimately that they're going to move Kyle Kuzma. I've been told that all the talk about, you know, the discord between him and LeBron, they realize the problem is Kuzma's contract. You can't get back requisite talent for him because he's paid
a rookie contract that's not at the top of the draft.
Exactly. So I agree with you in that they need to upgrade at the point guard position. They need another playmaker. Mm-hmm. But I would also say that they need both.
They do need both. Are they going to get a move done before the trade deadline?
I don't know that they're going to make a trade deadline, but I would expect that they're going to pick somebody up afterward.
Yeah, the interesting part is going to be, you know, they could have DeMarcus Cousins' roster spot. Okay, they could cut him, but that would give them just a depth of point guards that they don't need. And I don't think they're getting rid of Caruso. And I think Quinn Cook can make some shots and can be the 15th guy. I almost feel like you're not going to bump Rondo down a peg. I think you'd cut Rondo if you get a point guard.
Yeah, I also wonder where they are with Quinn Cook and with Avery Bradley. Avery Bradley, to me, feels like the guy who's the odd man out. Because Rajon, you can look at him and say, well, he's got a lot of experience. And
but he hasn't been good.
I'm not arguing. I'm not arguing that.
Avery Bradley's not playing well. Rajon Rondo's not good anymore, right? Bradley can play better.
Okay.
Rondo cannot.
But the counter to that is Rajon has been very special in the postseason.
When?
When he hasn't been good in the regular season.
But when? When Chicago? Was the last time?
Chicago.
How many years ago was that? How many years ago was that?
Understood. I'm not arguing that.
Dude, MySpace was the bomb.
But back when MySpace was the bomb. Here's the thing.
Yeah.
When a guy has that requisite experience and he has it in his DNA, you at least go, he's done it. For Avery, and no offense to Avery, but Avery has never done it.
So if I'm going to roll the dice
on one or the other, I can at least make a case that Rajon has demonstrated to me when the lights are brightest, he has come through.
Okay. They're all fighting over Darren Collison. Does he want to go to the Lakers or the Clippers?
I would gather by his previous relationship with Doc that he would prefer the Lakers. That would be his first choice. But I would also say, I've been told, that he would take the Clippers over any other option rather than leaving LA.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Like a guy who grows up in Southern California, plays at UCLA, has a chance to be maybe kind of the savior for the Lakers. If he doesn't take that gig, that would be more surprising than Kawhi and Paul George not playing for the Lakers. But he's a different cat, right? A Jehovah's Witness, a guy who walked away from a $10 million offer to not play for anybody this year. He still may end up making money back and whatever, but he is clearly a different cat. All-star announcements, starters were announced yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
You have any problem like with the Jimmy Butler snub?
Yeah.
Like, what's your?
Yeah, big time. This is what I don't understand. Why is Jimmy Butler in the front court? Why do we make him be part of the front court? He should be a starter regardless. You can make him a guard. I mean,
Who do you take out?
Trae Young.
Yes.
My
argument against Trae Young is this. Okay, is he better than many people thought he would be statistically in the NBA? Yes, but his team isn't any good. Right. And if he's the best player and he's an all-star, they have to be a little bit better. Whereas Jimmy Butler has gone and all of a sudden Miami is competitive at the top of the NBA. Now, I don't think that's all Jimmy Butler, but I think a good portion of it is. And the fact that then you use the statistical analysis, which tells you Trae Young is the third worst defender in the NBA,
right,
and his team loses, that tells you something about the value of the two guys.
If we are making the All-Star game all about being entertaining, which is essentially why
Trae Young is entertaining,
the fan vote.
Yes.
Trae Young is an All-Star.
Yes.
But if we're using
it. So is Zion Williamson, by the way, if we're going by that.
Sure. Right. Absolutely. But if we're going by, we want to reward the guys who are having the best season, then Jimmy Butler is a starting all-star guard.
Yeah, I'm not going to get,
we have to make a decision.
Right.
What is it? Because the coaches select on who the best players are. The fans select on who they like and who's the most entertaining. And so we have a conflict in what the definition of an all-star is.
I think it's where you go with all-pro more than all-star, right? Don't you? In terms of who's really had.
So that's my suggestion is that we just make the all-star game entertaining. Make it the fan vote. Make it all fan vote. Make it I just want to see the most exciting players who are going to put Al Horford, God bless him. You can be an all-star. I do not want to see him in the all-star game.
We want Zach LaVine.
Yes!
We want Zach LaVine.
Absolutely.
Right.
And so.
Can't win a game. Awesome dunker scorer.
He can win some games.
Okay.
We can have this conversation some other time. But then expand the all-NBA, the all-pro teams. Pick five of them at the end of the year. Now you're picking the best 25 players in the league, and we know what is what.
All right, Buke, I got to ask you. So Zion plays two nights ago. He's going to play again tonight against
mm-hmm.
Denver.
Mm-hmm.
What was? Give me just your impression watching him.
He surprised me in being able to do things that I did not expect him to do. Passing the ball, his floor vision, the three-point shooting. I don't know if that's sustainable, but it was impressive. I was struck by one, that he's not in shape after all these months, and that he runs like a guy whose feet or his knees or something hurts him as he goes up and down the floor. And it concerns me. Normally, I take great issue when load management and protecting players by not playing them is an issue. After watching him, I had no problem with them sitting him down the last few minutes because I thought he's fatigued, he's not in shape, he's carrying a little too much weight, and he has an injury history. I mean,
why is he
it.
Carrying too much weight? Why would they put him on that basketball floor if he's not at the optimal weight? What is the rush?
Why after all these months
is he not?
Could you not get him into shape? I can only assume that there's something about his diet or his metabolism that he picks up bad weight easily. Because again, it's one thing if you're 285 and 6'6". If you're 285 and 6'6", and you've had three injuries basically over the last year, that's a problem.
Yeah. Now, have you seen him in person before?
I don't think I have.
Okay. So that's one of the things that I think some people are, you know, you see him in highlights, you see him at Duke. I saw him play Duke Louisville in person last year. And when you're watching him warm up, you're like, wow, he really is. And at the time, people thought he was like 6'7", you know, and you're like, wow, he really is 6'5". He looks... His build is not that of a basketball player.
Right.
Like, basketball players are not built that thick, you know, from his leg. Like, he's – most basketball players have little stick legs, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And even when they have broad shoulders and then they mm-hmm. have a thin torso, right? Mm-hmm. And they got that perfect V. Mm-hmm. He's not that. He's like a block of muscle and probably some fat as well. But I was struck by – I knew he could pass. I know he can play. The shooting, he was wide open. And obviously that's the stuff that right. you work on most when you're sitting out.
Yep.
But the fact that they let him on the floor when he wasn't in, like, you cannot be in basketball shape and lose your wind. Mm-hmm. That I understand. Mm-hmm. But I would have thought he'd be, you know, 245, 250 flying around the court.
Yes.
You know, looking like a guy who dropped 20 pounds.
Right.
And he didn't. And that alarmed me to where, like, is this the best shape he can get in?
Yeah.
Maybe they think just playing him into shape the way that Shaq used to play into shape. But the problem is that when you play heavy, that's when you get hurt.
And when you're not in shape and you're playing heavy and you're picking up the game,
yes,
40 games in,
yeah,
when everybody
lost.
Else has been playing for yeah. 40 games, like that doubles the amount that you have to catch up on.
Rick Bucher, check him out on Speak for Yourself upcoming. Of course, read his work in the Bleacher Report. Awesome stuff, Buke. Thanks so much.